You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, Dr. Carmen Bolter returns for the second of a two-part show. Dr. Bolter is a professor at the University of Calgary in Canada, who has just completed her 25th trip to Egypt. Since 1995, Carmen has been leading sacred site journeys to Egypt, the Mediterranean, Peru, and Tibet. She has traveled to 51 countries exploring ancient mysteries. Her new 2-DVD set, The Pyramid Code, is a magnificent revelation and in-depth exploration of the little-known secrets of Egypt in 5 complete programs. Documentary Channel named The Pyramid Code the top documentary of 2010. She is also the author of Angels and Archetypes, a multidimensional map of spirituality and goddess mythology and their contemporary relevance. Both can be found on her site at www.pyramidcode.com. Now, before I bring Carmen out, I was thinking to myself today about Christmas and, you know, presents and all that, and I thought of something that is in line with this time of year, and that is, instead of buying some junk for your friends and your relatives from one of those WM companies that is not providing good merchandise and is not doing good things, instead of buying something that no one really needs, consider purchasing the gift of knowledge. I suggest you get Carmen's award-winning 2-DVD set for yourself, your family, and for your friends. This is a gift that educates, mystifies, entertains, and keeps on giving. You can continue to learn and explore dozens of times through these videos. For those you love, open the gates to a home trip to Egypt and its mysteries. Get Carmen's DVD tonight for the special people in your life. So, with 25 trips to Egypt under her belt, she often got into places that are off limits, and this is the voyage of a lifetime. And now I will bring Carmen out after I thank her for giving her time so graciously to be on the show 2 times. So let's welcome Carmen to the show.
Hi, Lance.
Hi. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Good, good. Wonderful. Well, since the last time you had some incredible, awe-inspiring pictures that you shared with us, did you come up with some more from your trip?
Absolutely. I've put up a second set of green apparitions, and I just sent you the link to them. So if people go on pyramidcode.com, they can sign in with their name and email and get access to pictures of the Holy Grail of the Sacred Feminine that we saw last week. But this week we're looking at these green apparitions that were taken on a different night that you tell me what you think they look like, because they're not orbs. They are some kind of apparition of a different nature than the ones from last week.
Mm-hmm, definitely. I won't say what I think because I don't want to color anybody else's reaction to it, but they are most interesting. There's no question about that. Do you feel that there are a current shifts to a new paradigm that are connected to the pyramids and all of the ancient artifacts and temples and sacred sites that are located around the world on ley lines for some kind of reason to generate energy, consciousness, and so on and so forth?
Well, certainly when any of the sacred sites were built, they were purposely put on special ley lines or dragon lines, as they're called in China. And there's a reason for this, because of water tables underneath, location on the planet, patterns around the grid. And if there's anywhere on the planet that's going to be percolating up a certain kind of energy, it will be the sacred sites. The Great Pyramid still is the largest and is on the biggest part of the landmass of the planet. And it was built to be an energy generator, and it's in tremendous disrepair at the moment with the casing stones off it. But I think that if you're going to see apparitions, or if you're going to feel life-changing energy that's augmented in a more refined nature than ordinary waking reality, I think it's going to be at sacred sites, particularly at dawn and dusk.
Yes, I've heard that. Is the reason that for that because the energies at that time are able to get through more easily?
Absolutely. During the day, I find the Giza Plateau quite flat in its energy. The heat of the sun is there. But I've always found it really special at sunrise and sunset, just because as the energy shifts, there's something about the violet hour, I call it, where you see the violet color in the sky, and it is a place where the doorways are a little bit thinner, if you will.
Do you feel that also that there are all kinds of portals and vortexes and openings to other dimensions that might be still in existence at the site?
Definitely, and I think that new opportunities are coming. Like, how do you make a dimensional shift? What form is that going to take? And there's been some talk about Vesica Pisces and two intersecting circles where the center becomes a bit of a gateway that we can step through. But what does this mean? What are we stepping into?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we go from a densified energy to a more refined energy? Vibrational frequencies vibrate faster when they're more refined,
mm-hmm.
denser and slower when they're less refined. And so a lot of things in our everyday world, like electromagnetic frequencies in the house, dirty electricity, that sort of thing, lowers our vibrational frequency, whereas nature, negative ions of rain,
mm-hmm.
going to sacred sites, meditation, anything that quiets the mind, enhances our refinement. And so all of this leads to higher states of consciousness. Now, in traditional ways of being and thinking in our society, consciousness isn't one of the words that we typically use. Yet it's the most important thing that the ancient Egyptians certainly were focusing on. And as we increase our energy levels and our ability to have capacity even to deal with these energies, then we can access them. Now, there's things that are happening, and what's predicted is that we will have more refined senses. And so we'll be able to smell something, you know, when we're looking at a picture, or hear a picture, see music, that sort of thing. And so there is an evolution going on in the senses that will allow us, that is allowing us to look into other dimensions.
You know, I just thought of something that in that refined dimension, that it may even be possible that we would be at the pyramids and see them as fresh as they were the first day they were built.
Well, that's certainly a vision that I've had, and in the Pyramid Code, I spent a great amount of money making 3D animations to put the river back where it was, to put the casing stones back on the
pyramid. Oh, I love that part.
To see the reflection in the water. And then the first time I saw it after the animators had finally built it was just such a sense of relief, because my memories do hold it that way. And the first time I was at the Great Pyramid, I was complaining and saying, well, it's, you know, are you sure this isn't the second pyramid or the small pyramid? And they said, no, it's the Great Pyramid. And they're like, why don't you believe that it's the Great Pyramid? Well, my visions had it bigger. And it was, in fact, 30 feet bigger on each side, because when the casing stones were on, that increased the volume of it.
Right.
So my memory was taking precedence over the reality of me standing there.
Wow. You know, so many people that I know have past memories of being in the priesthood in the Egyptian times. And that's something I thought maybe we could talk about for a little bit, to find out where it began with the building of the pyramids. I've always thought that they must be extraterrestrial by design. And then there was a period of time when the divine feminine ruled for, I think, 1,000 years or more. And do you know what the chronology was? Can you follow that from the writings on the walls?
Well, certainly, again, in past life memory, everything was matriarchal, and it's long, long more than 1,000 years. pretty much everything demanded a balance. And after our last show, I received two emails from people saying, well, how do you know that the matriarchy can't go wrong and that women leading men and dominating... But matriarchy, as I always insist, is not the opposite of patriarchy, which denigrates
right.
the feminine, cuts it off, takes it out of the Bible, and if you can't see it, it's not there. It's
right.
completely out of balance, which is why we're in such trouble now. But matriarchy
yeah.
insists on a balance, leaving more for the children, honoring nature, and honoring the masculine in balance with the feminine. And
yes.
so all of everything else has been matriarchal. And I think that the period of the Mayan calendar from 3113 BC to 2012 AD is the patriarchal period, which is why it's so important that we signify that it's over and it ends. And the thing is it's still stuck in the collective, and so many people
yeah.
will perceive it that way, and there's going to be the last kicks of the patriarchy. But its agenda has been to erase evidence of everything other than itself, burning
yes.
the Mayan texts, destroying the Library of Alexandria, burning the witches who had the knowledge,
yep.
demonizing women of knowledge.
Killing the Hopis and all the indigenous
all
tribes.
All of that, the indigenous tribes.
Still doing it today.
Well, sure, and come on, if anyone, the reason that women don't run off to war most of the time, you know, if you've had a child, you don't think it's a great idea to go kill someone else's child. And men usually
yeah.
need to hook into women in order to feel the cycles of time and that sort of thing. And so everything was matriarchal. We're going to come to see this. This is my hope and my prediction over long periods of time, that we'll see this as the patriarchal hiccup. A failed experiment that if your dominator ways of being and thinking hurt people and aren't sustainable. And so we're not going to a place where women will dominate men. That is not the opposite. That's not what we're talking about. So
right.
balance is what you'll see on the temple walls. You'll see all kinds of images that show balance between the two sides of the brain and symbols that are insisting that the lower self surrenders to the higher self to do the holy work. Now, in my memories, I've seen that it was priests and priestesses. The priestesses were trained in the Sphinx Temple and on the plateau. The priests were trained at Heliopolis, which is on the other side, and they would come together to do the energy work that would lead to the passive power that was non-polluting and free. And what we have now is power sources that are dangerous to our health, that cause illnesses like leukemia that are lethal, that cause ADD. And when you have power lines close to schools, little kids can't sit still. Their nervous systems are so fragile. And so we really have disadvantaged ourselves. The powers that, as you say, were, have put all kinds of things into the society that are dangerous, that plastics are even dangerous, particularly to boys. There's all kinds of research showing this. But before products come out, it's not mandatory that research is done. So my point with all of this is that the Egyptians had the template for what I feel we are heading back toward, the understanding of the cosmos, celestial mechanics, peace, productivity, creativity. Instead of deconstructing, they were constructing. So
freedom.
All of the,
freedom.
Freedom, pleasure.
Yes.
Yes, altered states of consciousness that
yes.
weren't ridiculed or made illegal, and then out the back door, you know, somebody's bringing in lots of kinds of drugs for altered states of consciousness, and people are making lots of money on it. So
right.
I think that in many of your interviews and the interviews that we both listen to online, you know, we've really seen in an exhaustive fashion what a mess things are.
Oh,
and how
my God, yes.
dangerous it is. But we must move beyond that. Like, it's a well-established fact. And it's a miracle that we have arrived to the place where many, many people have woken up. Possibly, you know, the tipping point has been reached. And I may have mentioned this last time. What's significant is that we're in the seventh day, the galactic underworld of the Mayan calendar. And this is heralding the end of this imbalance. That if something is only supporting the masculine ways of being and thinking, reading, writing, arithmetic, if you can't see it, it's not there. It is not going to be supported. That things that are in balance, that are pulling people into a more neutral state, is what is going to be the ladder to consciousness. And so we need to focus on that and become co-creative, I say, have the lions at the gate in our thinking, that we think about the positive. What we talk about, we think about. What we think about, we bring about.
Mm-hmm.
We take ourselves into the world, into the life that we want to lead. So, you know, what would make us happy? I mean, and it's not just about me, myself, and I, almost the way The Secret says, you know, you can have a new car. You can have whatever you want, $1 million in the bank. But that's not the point. I think the point is about being connected to humanity and being an instrument of service. And I think this is what was at the foundation of the priests and the priests, the high-level initiates, probably a better way of putting it, of their training, was surrendering the lower self to the higher self and working fields within fields within fields. The surrendered field of the higher self in a group and in the field of the pyramids and in the energy field and building upon that, but for the purpose of assisting human evolution.
Yes.
Not the singularity of what works for me. And so, case in point, they would build charges of energy in a highly charged field with water running in the underground passageways, and manifestation was possible where something could literally come from a more refined dimension into someone's hand. And if someone said, oh, that's mine, I'm going to take it and keep it, then they could never do it again. And so it was not about I manifested it. We manifested it. But for what purpose? For the good of all.
Yes.
And these sorts of ideologies are have been just stomped right out.
Oh, my
God. Yes, and we just become, you know, quite selfish. So you've got, you know, this whole generation of little emperors and little princesses, you know, who feel like, you know, the whole world, you know, rises and falls on their desires.
Yeah.
And that's very dangerous because that doesn't bring all of us into new levels of existence and consciousness.
Exactly. You said that so beautifully. And it also emphasizes the idea that we are in the quantum realm, we're entangled, and that anything that we do to ourselves or to another, we're doing to the whole. So you can't kill somebody on some foreign plane and think that, you know, or do something in private. That, you know, there's so much sexual abuse with women and men and people being sold on the sex slave market and so on and so forth. But you can't do that without affecting the whole.
And, well, sure. Go ahead.
You know, and so the whole this whole mess has to be, you know, it seems as if people high at the top must have infiltrated the priesthood, and they were service to self entities, and they perverted or distorted the teachings so that they convinced people that they should have things for themselves and individualize.
Well, you're really touching on something here, because one of the stories that's very near and dear to my heart is the story of Akhenaten and Nefertiti, who were in the 18th dynasty, and that came after Hatshepsut, who was a female pharaoh. And remember, again, the dynastic parts of Egypt are the patriarchal parts. Mm-hmm. And there was a percolation of the true spirituality coming back when the Amun priesthood, Amun being the period of dark, and we still say Amen in the churches, and they would make people pay for their salvation, pay for a good passage to the other side.
Right.
And Akhenaten and Nefertiti said, forget it, we're not doing that anymore. And they closed the temples, and they moved to Tel El Amarna and Akhetaten, which is the horizon of the sun, which is what it was called in those days, and they started over. And the Amun priesthood, you know, plotted to, you know, get things back because they wanted to make money. 50% of the harvest of everyone was paid to the temple to ensure a proper burial and transition to the other side. Well, that's kind of sounding like here, and it's also sounding like the church that makes you pay for your spirituality.
Yep.
And they insisted on it, and it deteriorated, and we still have that imprint, and we haven't had peace on the planet since, which to me is pretty serious.
Yes, it is.
And there was this percolation of the energy coming back in its purity, and it worked beautifully at Amarna. People were creative, there were flowers, everyone was in a leisurely lifestyle, and they were happy, 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 and made beautiful, beautiful things. And so One of the things that you'll see in the Pyramid Code is hundreds of objects from the Amarna period. And they're just gorgeous to look at, the jewelry, mm-hmm. and you've seen it. It's mm-hmm. fantastic to look at, and it seems so modern in some way. But the ideology that went with that was very much a personal empowerment for the purpose of giving to the whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that seems to be the direction that we, the only direction we really need to be going in. I just feel that that's a natural progression to whatever is next, that we can't continue to rape and pillage the planet. The planet is alive, and it's a conscious being. The sun is a conscious being. Everything is alive in the universe. And you can't tell me that, you know, our thoughts don't affect reality, or that what we do to the planet and each other isn't causing some kind of ripple. And I wouldn't be surprised if our development of atomic bombs and some of the other nasty stuff that the military has come up with, I'd be surprised if it hasn't raised some eyebrows in some of our star family on other planets, maybe on the other side of the galaxy.
Yes, and unfortunately, it's impossible to prove, but the way our science has been conducted in academia, you know, what is proof, and how do we know? And we're hovering on the edge of disclosure. But yet, in many cases, people are quite certain that it's been ascertained, and that it's only the official story and the media that's not allowing that. But, you know,
yes.
There are surveys of people. I mean, do you believe in this, in the fact that there are other beings around? But what does that mean? Because these sophisticated beings are also in other dimensions. And,
yes.
You know, how dare we say, well, it's only the third dimension, and if you're not in the third dimension, then that's it, you know. And we've discussed that faster can see slower, but slower can't see faster. So the
exactly.
densest of the dense, the least evolved, the most materialistic, the cruelest, the least developed, and maybe even the least intelligent, and certainly
yes.
the least in touch with what's really going on with everybody, are running it.
Yes.
For their own
agreement.
For their own purposes, for their own greedy, power-hungry ways of being, and that just won't do. And then the people who become more refined, who are more in tune with nature, who are healthier, who are more aware, they wouldn't dream of thinking about that. And having been to 52 countries, Egypt counts as one, the people of the world are lovely, and they're kind, and they're generous,
yeah.
and they're open, they want you in their homes. You know, I never felt a sense of danger when I was traveling. And, you know, we're just told over and over again, the demonization of all things Middle Eastern, unless you're in the Middle East, and then you see that everybody wears their hearts on their sleeve. They never criticize Americans. They're stressed. They're very stressed, like the rest of people with systemic stress, if you will. The system is really, really taxing people at the moment, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and financially. But the people of the world are ready to love one another and
yes.
and to love the planet. And so we seem to be stuck in this place where the governments are the problem,
yeah.
and we're
yeah.
over-socialized.
Yeah.
People who were moral, like when you think of the Gnostic traditions, which was all about deep knowing, the sense of knowing from within, not repeating a fact that somebody else wants you to know, somebody else wants you to repeat, and they call that knowledge. That's not knowledge. And so when people are connected, then they're connected to morals. And so they don't want to squish the bug.
Right, right.
And they will, if there's one loaf of bread and five hungry people, you don't say, well, I'm keeping it for me. No, you give it to everyone.
Exactly.
You share.
Exactly.
And that's the natural state of the human being.
That's right.
Okay. And you don't have to teach people that. But the thing is when we're over-socialized and we're over-controlled, then there's silly rules, like you can't cross the street when you're not on a crosswalk. Well, why not if nobody's coming?
Exactly.
And you can't ride your bicycle without a helmet. Well, how do you know if you fall down, you're going to land on your head?
Right.
And if
yes,
you want to wear a helmet, then wear it.
Right. It's going on. It's exponentially. Well, part of that I think is because it all goes back to the banking system sucking all the money out of the economy and having the taxpayers pay for it.
Yep.
And as a result, the states have no money, so they start making more laws so that when we break one, and we're bound to break one at some point because there'll be so many of them that you can't walk out of your house without breaking a law. So, there'll be fines and fines and more fines, and that's already that way, you know.
It's already that way, and we're paying for our own enslavement.
We
don't need any of that.
Right. We're paying for our own enslavement.
Oh, listen, I moved to Taiwan, and I was working at a university as a professor. And before I left, I declared myself non-resident and went through the whole legal process of saying, as of this date, I am no longer a resident of Canada. And then when I came back, the first, day when I put an offer in on the house, I had to start. It took me 3 weeks to register with all the people who were going to get my money.
Oh, my God.
For insurance, for utilities, income tax, for this and that, And I just, you watch, it's absolutely ludicrous what we have to pay compared to other countries, what they pay for utility bills and that sort of thing. Like, it's just a minuscule fraction. Today, gas, 10 cents a liter in Egypt.
Wow.
To run an air conditioner 24/7 in 100 degree weather in Taiwan, $9 a month.
Wow.
Landline, $1.58.
Wow.
Yeah, not kidding. And so I'd come back and see everybody, paying hundreds of dollars for natural gas to heat their homes in Canada in the winter, hundreds and hundreds.
Oh, yeah.
And people are complacent. Well, what are we going to do? But they push to see what we will endure.
Yes, that's right.
And now they want smart meters that are going to give even more electromagnetic frequencies. I'm one of these people that can feel those frequencies.
Yeah.
And fluorescent lights and that sort of thing just really are very, very taxing on me. And so some people aren't that sensitive, but it doesn't mean it's not affecting them.
That's right.
But I'm not giving up my wireless internet because that's the only thing we're going to have to endure. That's one that I want.
Yes, well, I kind of feel the same way on that one. Well, it's the only way I can get on the internet in any way, and with a satellite dish. So, they don't have the lines out in the boonies of Northern California. But you're so right about all this, and it does seem that there is a tension and a revolutionary air, or evolutionary air, that's growing and has been building, and it will reach a tipping point.
Well, I've had this idea where just the way we put a card into an ATM machine,
mm-hmm.
What if they said, okay, you've got $2,000 of taxes to pay this round. Do you want to fix the hole in the corner on your street? Would you like to pay a pension for a guy who only worked for 6 years in office? Would you like to pay for his lunch, his yacht, his vacation? Or do you want to, put in something new and repair something in your neighborhood? What are you going to pick?
Well,
I'm going to sign up to give trillions of dollars to a couple of bankers? No.
No.
But would you fund a community center and, a learning center or something? Sure.
Absolutely.
But see, if they gave us a choice, if it was really a democracy, the world would change immediately. But people are becoming apathetic because they don't think that what they do matters.
Yes.
Right?
That's right.
So.
That's right. And we're going to have to take our power back if we're going to make any changes because...
Well, how? That's the point. How? Re-empowered.
There are movements to, for instance, Max Kaiser has a movement started to crash J.P. Morgan by buying silver. And that seems to be catching hold. There are people who are growing vegetables for the hungry. And this one little girl who was 8 years old is now about 11 or 12, and she has a huge industry feeding thousands of people. So... these things start with one person, and if we feel that we're not that person and we're waiting for that person to show up, well, that's not right. We are the person we've been waiting for, and we need to be the one to stand up and take the first move.
Yes, and though, there are so many controls that you need a permit to build this, and you need a license to do that. And
if,
I know.
Believe me.
That's right. So the point is, though, that if we're going to get our power back, the government has to somehow let go of these, you know, grips that they've got on everybody and everybody's pocketbook.
Absolutely.
And compounded interest and all this thing with the mortgages.
God, yeah.
There is a way to fix it, and we could recover within two generations. And it's, I'm not saying within, you know, 2 months or 2 years. It will take a while, but it's possible. But real people, if these controls come out of the way, will know what to do. I think people learn how to be criminals in jail by doing something like maybe having a marijuana charge or something, and then they, you know,
right.
Then they get disadvantaged, and then they're, you know, they're scarred because they've been in jail, and then they start to be criminals.
Right, right.
That sort of thing, you know, where it hurt people hurt people.
That's right. Well, you know, there are some game changers. One thing that I've learned over the years that I've been doing this show is that the technology for is held by private corporations in various places, you know, that we're not supposed to know about, is approximately 10,000 years ahead of what we are allowed to have. And part of that is free energy and anti-grav and a lot of other things that seem Star Trek-y. But
Of things that the Egyptians had.
Absolutely, yes.
Proof perfect that the Egyptians had all of that, and
yes.
That Tesla knew that, and
yeah.
That it was shut down by exactly J.P. Morgan because they thought,
Morgan.
hey, we can make money on everybody, and they are.
And they
look
are.
How much money they're making.
Oh,
I mean, think. I mean,
ludicrous.
I've said this before on the air, but maybe not on your show. If you and your family got every dollar back that you paid in taxes, interest, and utilities all at once, you'd have $1 million or more.
Wow.
Think. In your whole life and their whole life.
Wow. Yes. Yes. And the other thing I heard is if we had the money from the bailouts, which ended up being in the trillions, every person in America would immediately get a check for $350,000. That wouldn't be bad. That
exactly.
would have solved a lot of problems.
Well,
but
we can solve all our problems if we stop making them. Well, we say we. It's them. It's, you know, when they say, well, who's them? Them and us and all of that. Like, real people, I think, are basically good. And the thing is that
yes.
even the most hardened criminals and bad people who do bad things, they're hurting. And I know
yeah.
that you can't fix everything, but people can be encouraged to change, and they can change as soon as you get out of the irritating electromagnetic frequencies or get off aspartame connected to fluoride and all these different things and pharmaceuticals making toxic cocktails. Take all that away.
Yes.
Settle people down. Put them in nature, and
yeah.
it will change.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. We know what needs to happen. So, you know, maybe it's a matter of alignment with a sufficient number of people, and the 100th monkey theory would kick in.
Well, you know, when the Fancy Pants bomber happened last year on December 25th, I knew it. I knew they were going to do something right around Christmas when people were, and it just seemed so predictable to me. And
mm-hmm.
I started digging around, and right away it wasn't coming up about what that was really about. Again, TSA, the radiation, again, push, you know, it's predictable. And this WikiLeaks and the way they're framing this guy, and the real history of it, and who's really behind it.
Yes.
And the whole history, it's predictable, so that they can say, oh, it's a security leak, we have to do this and that and this and that. So this is back to David Icke's problem, reaction, solution.
Yep.
And people are aware. Things are happening right away, and people are on it.
Yes.
And they're deciphering
yes.
it. And we're
yes.
communicating on internet. So their idea will probably be to try to kill it. Cancel clear. Because it's probably not that possible to do. But the thing is that the way internet works, the way a computer works, is actually the way our brain works.
Oh. Huh.
The memory and all of it. You know, the amount of RAM you have, the amount of capacity that you have to think, all of these things can be, you know, we are superhumans. And I'm not talking about a machine kind of thing. We have the same DNA as the ancient Egyptians did, and they were capable of manifestation, teleportation, all of it, levitation, anti-gravity, they were doing it. And I'm absolutely certain of that. The evidence is everywhere. the symbolism will show it to you, and I can walk you through that. And the pyramid code is a good start to piece it together, but it's not something that you can cover in an hour-long conversation or, you know, in a few little animations. It's a bigger story, and I think everybody who watches the pyramid code knows that there's much between the lines, and there's much that's implied,
yes.
and
yes.
more that can be said. But we have the capacity to be psychic, to communicate with one another, and we are gaining in abilities.
Yes.
People are more psychic than they were. Things are trying to dumb it down, but despite that, people are still becoming more sensitive. And that,
yes.
so we've got these two different trends going. The evolutionary trend that's pulling us out, and then the oppression part that's pushing us back down. But I think it's their turn to be done. I'm actually, you know, between you and me, I'm really surprised that things haven't fallen yet.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. I was kind of hoping for a couple of years ago, but I've been sitting here drumming my fingernails on the table and waiting, but it doesn't happen. So I'm just gonna have to see what happens. I mean, I'm here now. Might as well see what happens in 2012.
Well, the thing is that we're already in that energy, particularly
yes.
so close to solstice. And, you know,
oh, yes.
from 2008 through to 2010, we're ratcheting in. We're zooming through the galactic center right now, and we are electromagnetically changing. And that's why the interference patterns of the electrostatic energy are creating some kind of a conflict. But even, you know, sending links to interviews back and forth and informing ourselves, you know, there's just so much. We have such a capacity now to be able to absorb information and connect it to our gut and know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, we've got sensors now that say, no, yes.
Yes, that's right.
That person's lying.
Yes.
This person I trust.
Yep.
Yes?
Yep.
That's right. Something fishy about this. I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but let's just reserve. And we are listening to ourselves.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I totally agree with you on that one, and it is happening for me too. So, you know, I know enough people that it's happening to see that that's a trend that's continuing.
Absolutely.
Now,
and with leading the Egypt trips, you know, people say, I need to go to Egypt with her. And they're in. That's enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
A self-selection of somebody who really gets the sense. And I have nothing to do with that other than, you know, speaking and producing films and books. But the thing is that it's an alignment. And well, it was my conviction on the spiritual level when I started all of this that the point was to trigger high-level initiates who already remembered. So I fully anticipate that the people who come to Egypt with me are already going to have this knowledge buried in there somewhere.
Yeah,
and people
yeah.
do get triggered now. You know, they may get zapped with energy somehow and then have to really go into incubation when they come home a little bit to sort it out. But they're all emerging with a higher level, a higher vibration, and more abilities. So
now,
it's amazing, actually.
You've been in some of the places with your groups and alone that people are usually not allowed to go to over the years. What are some of the mystical experiences or feelings or spiritual experiences that you've had over the years?
Well, a lot.
That would take another show, wouldn't it?
A lot, even more. But the thing is that, okay, well, the strongest for me personally has been the time I spent inside the body of the Sphinx alone. And it used to be that a watchman would come and let me go in, but they wouldn't come in with me, but they're still in the Sphinx enclosure. And what these places are is magnification fields of everything, including thought forms. And
Whoa.
So when I was finally allowed to go into the entire enclosure by myself with nobody there, the experience was magnified dramatically.
Wow.
And whenever I have been, like, I'm not talking around the Sphinx, I'm talking inside.
Wow.
So there's an inner chamber of the heart of the Sphinx. There's chambers at the back that are, I say, wormholes because they're spiral. Tremendous vortex of spiral energy moving
wow.
in more than one direction. And every time I went into the Sphinx, I wouldn't sleep for 72 hours after.
Wow.
And that is a fact. And
Gee.
I'd be downloading all these light codes, and there's a big, you know, process about that in terms of how to unpack them. And that's why I use the metaphor for the computer, and that's why I've been technologically oriented from the beginning. The gadget queen, but I started computing in 1982. I didn't know anybody who had a computer, but I had one. The only email address I had was the guy at the store. But it is about downloading a program. But the thing is that then what? Just because you've downloaded the program doesn't mean you've installed it. And after you install it, doesn't mean you've made anything with it.
Yeah.
Right? And these are the same processes when you download a light code. Right? How do you use it? And it's human capacity that unpacks it. And so, I mean, I can keep going here, but there's 66 codons that are required. So it's 11 on the front of the body, 11 on the back. So every person comes with 22. And it requires three people, which, because of that level of energy, to unpack these programs.
Oh.
And so what ends up happening is a group of people will be together, or a few people, and all of a sudden everybody's finishing each other's sentences, and suddenly there's this wisdom coming. But it's a program that's already been installed, but gets triggered and turned on when there's sufficient surface area of consciousness to unpack it. Now,
So
I'm glad it makes sense to you, but this isn't something that's talked about. I've never heard anybody say
I've never heard anybody else say this.
But I know it's true because I've seen it happen over and over again. So the question was, what are the level of mystical experiences that I've had by spending time in these places? Well, I've been able to be alone in a lot of places and go back without a group. I mean, all the time that I've gone, I go in with the group and I stay later the other way around. And I've actually lived in Egypt and been able to go on the plateau every day and get into these spaces. So, I mean, I've had many, many experiences, and I've journaled all of them. And it's all the same thing. It's about increasing our capacity to handle energy, which is what the ancient initiates were able to do. And so when I see reenactments of Egypt, I always think it's laughable because they don't have the posture to be able to hold the energy. Like, they're kind of hunched over, and it's like, that's never going to work, right? When you think of figure skaters and, you know, how they extend their arms and how they stand, and they're actually flipping around on spiral vortices and landing on blades. Well, that's the level of posturing that the initiates were able to do, and that's what you see on the temple walls. But when you see people reenacting it, if they're not, you know, choreographed in a way that they understand this energy, then it's not going to happen. So when you look at frescoes, you'll see bands on the ankles, bands on the wrists, and bands on the top of the arms. Well, the ones on the top of the arms are what you would get if you understood sex magic, but that's understanding how to work the feminine and masculine energy and the kundalini and move it through the body and open around it, right? And it doesn't necessarily mean sexuality. It means some kind of sex magic, which is energy magic. And the ones on the wrists and the ankles are about holding the field. So when this huge amount of energy comes through, because it's my conviction that the high-level initiates were part of an energetic machine, very much like neural synapses, don't touch each other. They create a hormone that jumps across, and that's giving the signal. The remarkable thing for your arm to be able to move up and down and connect to the brain with your thought that says, I'm moving my hand.
Huh.
So the human divining rods were the high-level initiates.
Wow.
And these bands held a space around them so they didn't get electromagneticuted, if you will, which is a word I've needed to make up because we don't have such a word.
Yeah.
But it's the same process as getting electrocuted. You didn't have the capacity to shield that amount of energy, but it was not electrostatic energy. It was electromagnetic energy, non-polluting and free.
Wow.
So this is what they were up to. And this is how we build our capacity. And the thing is that we do, in fact, you know, everything that, you know, what do they say? That which doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So if we've endured a lot of stress and had loss and, you know, grief and trauma and whatever, if we get over it and move to become conscious and integrate the feeling instead of jumping over it, you know, and forgiving before you process sort of thing. Oh, everybody has to forgive, but do you know what you're forgiving sort of thing? And get through it. The next time stress comes, you've got more of a capacity to deal with it. And, you know, with grief and loss, if someone passes, you know, where did they go? Well, the Egyptians, I think they had a pretty good grasp. They had no word for death. So it's true that we have the loss, that the person isn't walking around in our everyday world. But they're here with us still. And so people who lose others that don't understand this, that are religious, if you will, with God outside them instead of inside, and
mm-hmm.
you only live once, and reincarnation is, you know, outlawed,
mm-hmm.
then how do you ever get over the loss of a person? Because apparently they look gone.
Right, right.
So these are things, again, I keep coming back over and over, that the Egyptians were modeling. They had the template for understanding how to be an empowered human in service to the whole of humanity and to the whole of the cosmos, it seems. Because why did they need to know so much about celestial mechanics and quantum physics? You know, like I have to be looking at astrophysics now to be understanding some of these
wow.
cycles.
Wow.
And the Egyptians already knew. And I know they knew because I think that it is about past life recall.
Well, now, with the with their profound interest and knowledge of the stars, which was, you know, all extensive, does our present star system align with any of their writings or carvings? I mean, is this period of time anything that would be reflected in the pyramids?
Well, actually, if anything, I think they knew that the bloodbath was coming. The way
mm-hmm.
we have past life recall,
mm-hmm.
I think they had future life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever the word would be. Premonitions, if you will. And they could see this was going to get real bad. And it is real bad. It's a bloodbath out there. It's a nightmare.
It is.
Okay. And so the in terms of the stars, we are coming to the turning point where we're going to move back toward the light slowly. But the minute we're moving toward the light, it's better than moving away from it where things get darker and darker. As it's getting darker and darker, well, you're in California, but up here, every little inch you go north at this time of year, it's dark early in the afternoon
mm-hmm.
and late in the morning. And the minute that we hit solstice, we feel relieved because one day later, we've got one more minute of light, and 2 days later, we've got two more minutes of light, and it builds. Mm-hmm. But it's inspiring to be moving in the proper direction. So the stars, what I'm doing is I'm looking at the supergalactic grid, the galactic grid, and the ecliptic meridian, well, all of the meridians, actually. But there's more than one cycle. There's the solar system, there's the galaxy, and then there's the cosmos, universe.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the stars are, you know, floating through, but what's connected to which grid? And
mm-hmm.
It's looking pretty certain that the pyramid fields, it looks like the pyramids are scattered, but they're scattered in clusters. And there's a sky-ground correlation,
mm-hmm.
and I'm working on this, and I'm trying to test it backwards, forwards, and every which way to see, you know, where the alignments went and what was actually represented. So it seems pretty clear that Orion's belt is the three pyramids of Giza, and Robert Vival gave us that, and I think he's quite right. Everything looks like that one's in place, and it looks like Sirius would have been Abu Roush. And, you know, the rest of it's coming together. But the point of the matter is that each of these huge cycles keeps the stars in a pattern with them. And certain constellations and certain groupings of stars are connected because they're within that realm, within that plane, moving in that big cycle. And other things, like our zodiac, fit along the apparent path of the sun, which is called the ecliptic. And that always hangs together because the sun is always doing the same thing, vis-a-vis the Earth and the stages of the yearly cycle and various cycles. And so the zodiac is what's influencing us most when you think of the solar system. Yeah? But
yeah.
There's other systems. There's the galactic part. And so we're moving in huge galactic cycles, which are also coming to a close. You know, so all of the different cycles are coming to a zero point at the same time. So it's making like a cosmic ladder that allows us to climb in not to... Well, there's 12 dimensions, but it's not a 13th dimension. It's a whole other universe, right? And so once we go through the galactic center, it's the birthplace of stars. It's where the enlightened energy is. And so to demonize it all, I keep using that word, but to, you know, say it's doom and gloom and the whole world's going to fall apart, I say nonsense. I say the world already fell apart.
Right. Right.
How much worse can it get, Lance?
I agree with you on that. Yeah, it can only get better from here.
Well, that's why I think we're surprised, because in one way it's getting better, in another way the people that are controlling things are controlling more and more and more.
Yes.
But people are like, you know, like we all can find freedom within that somehow. You know, they're not controlling, well, I was going to say they're not controlling the air we're breathing or the way we shape our day, but in some ways they are.
Yeah.
But still, we can find, in largely with nature, with the reflection of light off water, with, you know, a bird flapping in front of our eyes, something with nature usually can nourish our soul.
Yeah, yeah.
And the powers that be were can't control that.
I don't think they care for things that involve love or other living things.
Well, I do and you do.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I feed all the birds on my deck every day, and they come hopping and do their little dance, and they're just amazing.
Isn't that great?
So beautiful. I go out and I marvel at all these different personalities and different hairdos and different colors, and, you know, I just love them to death. And, in fact, today I had two bucks and one deer munching on the grass right in front of my sliding windows.
Well, and that's a sign that something is positive, that the animals aren't afraid. I've been seeing, I think it's the same one, a hummingbird every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have that too.
And it's the same. And I know that hummingbirds come in a lot of colors, and this particular green one, you know, zooms around, and it's almost like it comes to find me.
Yes,
it'll show itself
yes.
in the window that I'm in and then zoom around the other way, and I'm so delighted with it.
Yeah.
It makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's like an old friend.
Yeah.
It's like an old friend. Well, now, another thing. I noticed you did a chart that includes the Kali Yuga and the various other yugas and the Mayan cycles, and then you've got the codes of the, you know, the various Aries and Taurus and so on.
That's right.
Now, theoretically, we are in the Iron Age. Isn't that correct? And that's...
Yes.
Okay. And so does 2012 mark the beginning of the movement on the great wheel of life towards the next age, which is supposed to be the next one is the golden age?
Oh, not so fast. It's going to take a while to get back there.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot of controversy about this, and you're going to read various things. But, you know, Walter Cruttendon's done a lot of work at this, the Binary Research Institute. There's various people. And if you really research this, your head will just start to spin. But what I've ascertained, the Golden Age would have been 13,000 years ago, but what is happening is we're at the farthest point away. So if, in fact, we are in a binary star system and this with Sirius, which does seem absolutely confirmed in Starry Night Pro because it's the center of the astrogalactic grid, everything revolves around it, I'm in the process of making little mini videos to show how this works
to
explain all this, but it's a lofty process, and I want to make sure it's as simple as possible and totally confirmed as I come up with this stuff, but it is the next piece of work that I'm digging around in here, and it's very, very complex. But if it's a binary system, when we're in a golden age, we're the closest that we can be to this, and then it's an ecliptic orbit, and then we zoom out, and things go slower and slower and slower, and then when we reach the farthest point away, it's 13,000 years, it's the bottom of the Iron Age. And then as we turn the corner and start to zoom toward the center again, it picks up speed. So I'm making motions with my hands, and so it picks up speed, and then it touches the center and then moves away. And so we are at the slowest, most distant point now.
That's what it feels like to me.
And as we turn the corner, which is signified by December 21st, 2012, which is any minute, we come zooming back, and then we pick up speed as we're going. The closest point is the Golden Age. So it actually takes 13,000 years to get there. So we've been tremendously disadvantaged by history books telling us that we're only 6,000 years old because we can't even begin to fathom that there's hope.
Right.
Or where that's going to come from. Doom and gloom, it's over, never mind, the whole planet will fall apart, the end.
Right.
Well, and not only that, there was never anything magnificent that happened. Where's your proof? Where's that? If you think they had a diamond drill bit, where is it? After, you know, three world floods and 25,000 years.
Right.
Where's the diamond drill bit? I can't see it, so then you're wrong. You know?
Right.
Like, that line of thinking is just so obsolete and silly.
Well, yeah.
And then they want to call us silly. But,
yeah, exactly.
Okay, so
exactly.
We're still going to be in the Iron Age, but we're moving up and out. So then you have to go through the bronze, the silver, and the golden. Now, okay. as it happens, golden ages last longer than the others. And so that's what you see in a disproportionate circle going around. And the whole thing takes 25,920 years, so we roughly say 26,000.
Oh, I'll
and
be
so,
old.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's still us. I mean, I think that, you know, the recycle everything else. We recycle our souls.
Right.
We can't learn everything all at once.
Right.
You know, you said it, too, that you think that a lot of people, you know, who are interested in this sort of material have an affinity for Egypt, Atlantis, sacred sites, and we do.
Yes.
And so why would we care? Why would it trigger us? Why would we be interested in it? It's because
yeah,
we remember. Yeah. On some level, we remember. And I think that that's an excellent starting point for looking at all this material.
Oh, absolutely. Do you think there's any possibility that that those beings who originally created the pyramids, wherever they came from and whoever they were, could return?
Well, we're here. I mean, I'm not saying that
you
I had anything
that,
to do with building the
us?
Pyramids. Yeah, maybe not hands-on doing the anti-gravity to lift the stones, but absolutely. It's often been said, I think Edgar Cayce was the one who said that there's a group of souls that came through in Atlantis, came through in Egypt, and came
mm-hmm.
through now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, and, you know, I've met people who say, oh, I know how they did that. I know what that's for. And off they go. And, you know, because I can sit in a listening position and, you know, and I also, you know, have had my own memories, I can
yeah.
listen to people tell me what I already know.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So, yes, yeah. I think it's possible. And you know, I say it's harvest time for the black sheep. Most people who have these memories and these abilities are born into families that are completely ordinary and, you know, dense, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah.
And they feel completely alone. So the last trip I had to Egypt, you know, like everyone was a black sheep, you know, that basically were in their families and wondering what they were doing there, you know, including me. And so that's why I say it's harvest time for the black sheep. I mean, it, you know, we are coming together.
Yes.
You and I have never met.
Yeah.
Right? But we
right.
have met. I feel I know you very well.
I feel I've known you all my life.
Exactly. It's our third interview. We've spent 3 hours together.
I know. And as, I feel like I'm talking to an old friend. And, you know, and I am.
Right.
I am. Well, dear friend, I've been told that we have to wrap up the show. Those 3 hours have gone by awfully quickly.
Yeah.
Would you mention, again, where your site is so people can buy your DVD for Christmas presents? Something.
Yeah, well, it's
forever.
Everywhere. Amazon.uk.ca for Canada and .com for the States. Pyramidcode.com allows you to subscribe and see these pictures we've been discussing.
Yes.
And that's that.
Wonderful.
It's also going to be pay-per-view, pay-per-download within, I don't know, 10 days or so, where
oh,
people
good.
Can get high definition per episode and either just watch it or then download it and have it, and you don't have to wait for the disc to come.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's
and
a big coup.
I highly recommend all of your work. I mean, you're groundbreaking. Nobody has done what you've done so far, and with the love and... Well, anyway, I could go on and on and on, but they'll get the hook and I'll have a sore neck. So thank you so much, Carmen, for coming again, and I do hope that it won't be too long before we're having another chat.
Okay, well, call me anytime. Thanks so much, Larry.
All right, keep up the
all
great
right.
work, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Good night.